Because you are asking Darth Silver about the
You
price of
came
silver and gold.
prepared.
Yeah, no. Okay, so actually let me roll with that a little bit and not to be hyperbolic, but let's look at what's the worst case scenario. Like they're not going to zero. Gold and silver are physical assets that have uses. If that is the worst case scenario, think about that. Gold is 2x over its 211 peak. Silver did almost 3x.
In
Right. And
December. Kidding,
they've
kidding, kidding.
corrected,
Yeah.
they've crashed down to only $5,000 an ounce for gold and only 80. I'm not sure where it is right now, but are you kidding? These are phenomenal prices for the actual business of mining the stuff or building a mine or exploring for the stuff. I mean, if we dither sideways and if we drift down, if gold drops 50% over the next 5 years, the way gold did last time. Well, 2,500 is, most of the mines built right now were built assuming a sub $2,000 price level. That period of correction and consolidation and volatility will be the very best friend of anybody that missed the run up, because you're going to have an opportunity to load up at much better prices.
Lobo Tigra, independent speculator. Good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
Glad to be back on the show, Andy.
Hey, thanks for coming on. I always enjoy our time together, and there's great insights. And there really is. Let's chat about gold and silver quickly here, and we'll take as long as we want. But we had such a great market in 25, and then it just shot out of cannon. Went almost par well, it did go parabolic, both of them in I would say December-ish through January. Had a sharp pullback, especially in silver. It seems like we're leveling off. But what are your thoughts? Why is all of that? And do you see a more of a correction, or yeah, just give me your thoughts.
All right. Well, if we're going to start with where's the price of silver going, I should wear my appropriate attire. Because you are asking Darth Silver about the
You
price of
came
silver and gold.
prepared.
Yeah, no. Okay. So actually let me roll with that a little bit and not to be hyperbolic, but let's look at what's the worst case scenario. Like they're not going to zero. Gold and silver are physical assets that have uses. Gold industrial, maybe not so much, but the jewelry use is a real use. People still want gold. And you can't dismiss that as just being what, artistic or emotional. I mean, it's demand. So it's there. So, neither of them is going to zero. That's not a scenario. I think the worst case scenario might be that what we just saw, the peak we just saw was like 2011, and that we're headed for a multi-year bear market. If that is the worst case scenario, think about that. Gold is 2x over its 211 peak. Silver did almost 3x.
In
Right. And
December. Kidding,
they've
kidding, kidding.
corrected,
Yeah.
they've crashed down to only $5,000 an ounce for gold and only 80. I'm not sure where it is right now, but are you kidding? These are phenomenal prices for the actual business of mining the stuff or building a mine or exploring for the stuff. I mean, if we dither sideways and if we drift down, if gold drops 50% over the next 5 years, the way gold did last time, well, 2,500 is, most of the mines built right now were built assuming a sub $2,000 price level. So, okay, costs are up, but we're not going to 2,500 overnight. We're talking years, and you can adjust as you go. But I'm painting the worst case scenario here. Dear audience, put away the rotten tomatoes. I did not just predict $2,500 gold. I said that if that's their worst case scenario is a 2011 style correction leading to bear market, leading to the next big move up. Well, A, there was a next big move up. Like even if you top ticked 2011, you are more than whole now. Okay, it took 15 years. But who top ticks it, right? And if you did top tick it and you had conviction in your trade, you would have averaged down. So you would have been not just sitting on a double or better, you could be sitting on a triple or a quadruple. If you bottom ticked the market in 2015, you're up 4x right now. So, if that's our worst case scenario, that we're looking at an unfortunately long and painful buying opportunity, okay, I can deal with that as a worst case scenario. But I don't think we're headed for the worst case scenario. I think that in the same way we saw a period of consolidation over 2000, which lasted 3 years, plus or minus, you know, we went up to 2000 in 2020, the COVID thing, and then it waffled sideways. And then it made its next big move upwards. And then we'd had a somewhat shorter, similar period over around 3000-ish. And I was thinking we'd have something like this at 4K, but no, it went, you know, screaming up, which did make me nervous. But now it looks like we're heading into that period of correction and consolidation before the next big move higher. So for whatever it's worth, my base case is not bear market, but that was the peak. My base case is that we're in that period of correction and consolidation, and volatility will be the very best friend of anybody that missed the run up, because you're going to have an opportunity to load up at much better prices.
Yeah, so well said, really, because now I think is the opportunity, if you would, if you missed it. But and I don't mean that now, but I mean just this period of time here. And if for those people that are waiting and seeing, which really leads me to the stocks, because the stocks all, it seems like they all caught a bid, just about everybody. But now I think, and I want to know what your thoughts are, but I think we're going in this consolidation is, this is the shake. I don't want to say shakeout, but this is where the stock picker comes in, the winners and the losers. Tell me about right. that.
Or even if you're not great at picking stocks, like you just look at the market darlings now. Just make a list, you know, forget about me, forget about my experience, my track record, any of that stuff. Just make a list of market darlings right now in our space and wait for the next big scare. But you will have an opportunity to buy those at much better prices if that's all you ever did. Unfortunately, these kind of opportunities only happen once every 10 or 20 years.
Right.
Do that. You know, it's the buy when there's blood in the streets kind of mentality. Yeah, you can make that work really well. But let me address, I think, a really important issue here, because I've heard a lot about this from different readers, clients, and pundits out there too, talking about this. There's an idea out there that, you know, the margins have expanded so much. We just talked about how great the actual business of mining the stuff is. Margin expansion has been so great. Costs have not cut up that, and especially for gold and silver, which are money, it is reasonable to price gold and silver companies in gold and silver. And on that basis, they're cheap. You can make an argument that some of the best companies in the space have never been cheaper, valued in real money. And you know, and especially in gold and silver, that matters because A, it's real money, and because and B, that's what they produce. Like, this is relevant to their actual business. To value them in real money does make some sense here. So for those of us who understand this, this gives us a way, a metric, a way to look at value and make our picks, you know, hone in our radar where we're going to drill deeper. The bad news, though, like I agree with this thesis. I didn't make this up. You know, it's out there and I agree with it. But the bad news is that if there is a big scare, what we understand is not broadly understood. The momentum chasers, the generalist investors that are just discovering that gold isn't a four-letter word, well, it is, but not in a bad way, right? You know, those people, they're not gonna care. They're not gonna hold on. When the panic hits and the air pocket hits, they will sell. And think about it this way. During that 3 years of correction and consolidation after that first run up to $2,000 an ounce for gold in 2020, we had fluctuations from peak to trough on the order of 20%. 20% from $5,000 an ounce gold is $1,000. A $1,000 fluctuation in gold, you know, on the scale of things, we could roll through that. We could, you know, hunker down, batten down the hatches, whatever your metaphor is. We could understand and we could ride through that. But the Johnny come latelys won't. You know, you get $1,000 in short order sell-off, maybe not a day. You know, the $500 sell-off we saw in almost a day caused real panic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the bad news is that, you know, even if you have the most robust gold or silver producer out there that's cheap in real money, you know, it's a real value, even right now, all that, yeah, it's still going to sell off. If we hit one of these air pockets, that's what I'm saying. So on the one hand, it's great. There's an opportunity here. And as potential buyers, it helps us with our stock selection, but it's not going to help us, or it's not going to prevent losses in the next big bout of volatility. So the takeaway for me for that is I'm as bullish as I am on gold and silver, which is how we started this conversation. I'm actually not in a hurry to buy anything right now. I'm much more interested in rotating into oil or copper or uranium if I can right now, because I can find opportunities to buy low there, even by mainstream standards. Doesn't mean I've given up on gold. I'm just saying my plan, you know, what Doug Casey taught me all those years ago when I first started out in this business, you know, in diapers, was to make volatility your friend. And I think we have every reason to think, you know, if we are in a period of correction and consolidation, volatility is absolutely to be expected.
Yeah. So to pull on that link, and I want to get to the other sectors here briefly in a moment, I want to get to them. But your process in evaluating a company then, is it just really what's the value of the project or value of the company priced in gold? Is it starting there, or where does it walk me through that, your process in the end? And the reason I say that, let me set this up. I just literally just the other day, I had lunch with a mining executive, a well-known mining executive, a gentleman I have an enormous amount of respect for, and I own the company. They're high producers, right? Meaning they don't have they have a lot of margin at these prices, but they don't have a lot of margin if gold goes much, much lower, if you would. But yeah, what's your evaluation? Walk me through that. How would you decipher the good ones and the bad here? What do you look for?
We could probably talk for hours on this. I don't actually, like I was saying, I understand that argument, and I understand it as a reason, for looking for opportunity in this space. But I don't actually price companies in gold and silver. Like I get it as an analytical and maybe even a rhetorical tool. It's context. But I still look at dollars for dollars. I look at market cap. I look at, you know, book, you know, PE or PNAV, or, you know, actual metrics that other investors are going to look at. Because in the end of the day, I'm not trading with you and me and Doug and all our guys that get it. I'm trading with the broader market of general, and not just generalist investors, but more general investors who look at things from a conventional way. That's who's on the other side of the table for me. Mm-hmm. And so I need to keep that in mind when I'm making my decisions. So when it comes to something like the majors, which are, they're never going to trade at a discount, right? But unless we're at a cyclical low. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I play the majors, is I don't buy them when they're going high. I never buy all-time highs. I wait for cyclical lows. And if you do that, you those things go up and down, up and down. You do that every time. You can't bottom tick and top tick, but you can objectively see this is low, right? You can buy low, sell high, just keep doing that. For the other companies though, then, you know, you've got, for developers, you've got an NPV from a feasibility study. I absolutely want a discount to NPV. And you could say, oh, well, this is only half the deposit. It's really bigger. So it's okay if it's fully valued. No, it's not. You know, if they only put half the deposit in the study, it's because that's the more feasible part, right? There's a reason why that's in there and the other stuff isn't in there. So I absolutely want some kind of discount to that NPV. If you're going earlier stage for exploration, there is no NPV. There's a guess, you know, how much, you know. There's a temptation to say, oh, well, it's cheaper than its peers, but that's deceptive, because, okay, it's cheaper than its peers, but it's in AK-47 Central. Well, you know, so that's appropriate. It should be cheaper than its peers.
I got the joke.
Right? So, you know, at that point, it's more like, it's as the great Canadian philosopher said, you know, you don't skate to where the puck is, you skate to where the puck is going to be. So that is going out on a limb. It is a speculation. There is no economic study signed off on by engineers. But you look at it and you say, okay, you know, here's the footprint. You know, here's how long the vein is at surface, or here's how big the geophysical footprint is. Here's where the drill results are. Here's the potential size. And by the way, you don't have to be a 43101 QP to do a, you know, back of the envelope resource estimate. It's geometry. You take the drill results, you look at the volume they fill, you estimate an average volume of cubic meters, and you take the average grade of the drill results, and you need a specific gravity. With those three things, And you can just assume for like gold, it's going to be around 2.6 or something like that. You use those three things and you can actually do your own resource calculation. It's going to be wrong. It's going to be totally wrong.
Yeah.
But at least it gives you something. Like if this thing, it's only 100 meters long, this thing is never going to be 1 million ounces. It's just not big enough, right? Mm-hmm. Or this thing is kilometers long. Okay, it's low grade, but it's kilometers long. This could be a world-class discovery. That's the potential. The drill results are consistent. Okay. You know, let's skate to where the puck will be.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of an art as much as a science, I'm afraid. But the goal is always to say, this is on sale. You know, the goal is always to buy low and sell high. And if it's high and, you know, I might hope for the greater fool to come along and buy it higher, I'm not interested. I mean, and that can work. I mean, clearly it has worked, you know, in a mania phase that works. But I'm always looking to buy low.
Yeah. No, well said. And I would agree with your thesis. Speaking of value and everything you said, volatility, and volatility is your friend. I was on the record with you, and I've maintained that, although I have bought some good names here recently, just recently in the last few days. In the gold space, but I've been rotating somewhat, I don't want to say a lot, but a good 20% of my portfolio into energy. And I just see that as very underdeveloped, specifically oil and natural and gas. I did buy some uranium, a uranium junior just the other day. But what are your thoughts of that rotation? I want to know for my own self. And yeah, what are your thoughts really on energy, and is there deep value there?
So the answers are yes and no. There is a lot of interest, you know, the AI story. And I mean, you can't listen to any financial media without the talking heads going on and on about energy plays. So this is not a stealth market. Mm-hmm. Selectively, yes, there are opportunities. I do think there's good news and bad news here. There is potential for everything related to this to go on sale like next week. Or next month, if there's a big AI scare, like when that DeepSeek thing happened about a year ago, like everything got whacked because suddenly everybody said, oh, well, we're not going to need energy anymore for AI, which is completely wrong. Instead of meaning that we're going to use less energy, it just meant we're going to use more AI, that it's more efficient, right? So not to beat that to death, I've said this before, but for anybody who hasn't heard it, you know, when there's a moment like that DeepSeek moment, where the markets just panic and they sell everything. I mean, it's quite like the baby in the bathwater metaphor. That is an absolute gift. When the market is wrong, they're just wrong, and great stuff goes on sale for the wrong reason, you know, there's nothing better for a speculator. That's, you know, that, well, maybe blood in the streets, but that's mm-hmm. even rarer. Markets make mistakes every year. Blood in the streets is usually a generational kind of thing, but it's your opportunity to buy low. So anyway, what I'm saying is good news and bad news. You know, it's bad that there's potential for, you know, an AI scare to put a lot of these energy plays on sale. But that's good news, because if you're still building your portfolio, that means you're going to have a buying opportunity to buy lower, because the long-term outlook, I think, is fine. And by the way, you know, like even if you hate AI and you think it's all, you know, a load of dingo's kidneys and you know, there's a lot of disappointing AI stuff out there. The hallucinations are still a problem and all that. We don't need to go too far down. But, you know, Dr. Copper was called that for decades before the AI thing, right? And the nuclear power generation capacity of the world, the globe, especially in BRICS countries, but all around the world, it's growing gangbusters. The Chinese, they'll never forgive me for that slip, but sorry, both sides. Senior moment. The Chinese are planning to double their reactor fleet by 2040. In nuclear build times, that's tomorrow. And mm-hmm. you need your fuel before that. You know, this is huge. And this is before, you know, AI, ChatGPT, all this stuff. These plans, you know, they're developed over years and years. So the demand side for critical energy minerals, and I really like copper and uranium the most, it's just baked in the cake. While the supply remains constrained, which is not the case with lithium and some other minerals we could point out, for copper and uranium, supply is constrained. I think the uranium supply is more easily fixed than the copper supply, but even that will take years. We've already had a chance for triple digit uranium prices to cure triple digit uranium prices. And for a couple of years, it did apparently, but not for long. It turned out that the low hanging fruit in the uranium space was much more difficult to pick than anybody anticipated. And frankly, the players have all either moved the goalposts or failed to deliver on time or on budget. So the demand for these energy minerals is not an AI play. The AI thing is just a tailwind on top of very robust demand going forward anyway. So if there's a sell-off based on the AI play blowing up, that's a market mistake and an opportunity. Yeah. If there's no sell-off and it's just a tailwind keeps blowing, then they keep going. So I am willing right now to deploy into the space selectively, but only something that I'd be willing to average down on if we did get that buying opportunity.
Speaking of which, about that opportunity, I had you on last spring. I had you on since then, but I'm just thinking, remembering this, we had one of those events. Well, I thought was one of those events. Uranium just crashed, and it crashed briefly. And I was a buyer. I wish I would have bought more, but I was a buyer. And it was exactly that event. It's like, this is stupid. This is a mistake that the market's making. And you, and I'll shout you out, you were like, yeah, that's like a deal. Mortgage the house. It looks like a deal. And it certainly was. Walk me through, and I should have started this, but I want to ask you now, we're in February, it's already going so fast, but mid-February now. Walk me through just expectations. I know expectations are very, very tricky. They never, really rarely happen, but just your expectations really for the year for 26, really in this space, what do you see materializing? What do you see happening? And what are some potential tripwires?
Are we still talking energy metals or which space?
I would say in the natural resource stock space, but also in general sense.
All right. Well, there are times shorter term where the monetary metals and the industrial metals are contracyclical. We could have scare moments, you know, a heating up of the war in Ukraine, or things blowing up again in the Middle East could cause your basic industrial commodities to tank or fall significantly, while that fear would push money into the monetary metals. Longer term, commodities tend to move in sync and super cycles. And my view is basically everything all around the world, all paths lead to inflation. You know, China is trying to get itself out of the doldrums with, you know, one stimulus package after another. You know, hats off to them for not overdoing it, not reinflating a new housing bubble. They've tried really hard not to do that, but they keep having to come back to the table with more because they're not getting things going. So ultimately, the printing press always wins. The new government in Japan, the inflation is the agenda is inflationary. We're going to spend more, but we're not going to tax more. You know, that's the same thing in the United States, right? We're going to spend more, but we're going to cut taxes. That's inflationary. Europe rearming, Germany, China, you know, restart its industrial heartland. Major, major investments. That's inflationary. Well, the wars, you blow stuff up, you have to replace it. You print money to do that. I don't see any major trend around the world that's deflationary. And I know that, you know, the Rosenbergs and the perma bears out there, my respect to my friend Rosenberg, David Rosenberg, Rosie, he's not really a perma bear. I think he's a very rational analyst. And there is bad stuff out there. There are reasons to be concerned about the economy. But I think the broader market bears are underestimating what our friend Lynn Alden likes to call fiscal dominance. Nothing stops this train. I mean, that's the world I see. I mean, she just nailed it better than I did. Nothing stops this train. It's just the money printers going burr and hyperdrive all around the world. So back to your question, this is broadly, you know, very bullish on basically anything governments can't print. And that certainly includes commodities as a class.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. And again, we certainly can have a deflationary, more than a deflationary scare. That's in my spectrum of thinking. I see that as a possibility, but I see what's the higher probability is just what you said. I mean, it's just at the end of the day, they're just going to print.
And if that did happen, sorry, if there was like really bad labor reports and there was some negativity and companies pulled in, you know, the money helicopters, they never left the sky. but they just go into overdrive, right?
I
cannot see this administration in the United States, or really any government anywhere in the world, saying, oh, that's okay. You know, the market needs to liquidate the errors. You know, we can have unemployment go higher. That's necessary. Nobody's going to take that medicine.
Right.
I can't think of a government anywhere in the world that would say, yeah, we're going to do that. Austerity is the name of the game. Sorry.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that there's no possible, economic harm or hardship or scare possible. I'm saying the response to that, well, A, the money helicopters have never left the air. But the response, if that's not enough, is we'll just print more.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Doritos economy. We'll, you know, eat all you want. We'll just make more.
Right. Well, Lobo, always, we'll end it on that. Always a pleasure talking with you. If people want to do business with you, if they want more information about you, read, do more due diligence about you, how do they do that? How do they find you?
Well, I have a free weekly letter at independentspeculator.com. We do not spam you if you sign up. You get one notice per week. And you can follow me on Twitter/X at Due Diligence Guy. My little corner of the Twitterverse is it's actually fairly polite. I try my best to bring useful or informative or amusing content to the audience. And actually, a lot of the people who follow me there contribute interesting things as well.
Yeah. And shout out to yourself and the gentleman handling your memes. They've always given me a great chuckle. I've told you that before, but I loved your memes.
We got to have fun. No sense playing the game if we can't have fun.
All right. Great seeing you, Lobo. Look forward to seeing you in person out on the road.
All right. Take care, Andy.
Take care.